Okay. My staff tells me that we're live. That's not your start time yet, though. We're going to wait till I call the case. Good morning, attorneys Todd and Potts. This is your first time with us in this mode of oral argument. So you'll have to bear with us, and we will with you as well. You'll find if you look at the corner of your screen that has the word Supreme Court Hearing Room, you're going to see momentarily a green sign that'll say start. Then 5 minutes before your argument concludes, you'll have a yellow sign that gives you 5 minutes. And then when it's time to stop, a red sign. So you're going to have to kind of monitor that a little bit rather than the lights that you probably were accustomed to on the podium. Are you both ready to proceed?
Yep.
All right. Very good. Then I'll call our first case of the day, State versus Brooks. And Attorney Todd, I think you are our leadoff hitter today. Please begin.
Good morning. May it please the court, Assistant State Public Defender Leon Todd on behalf of the petitioner Alfonso Brooks. In this case, Mr. Brooks asserts that the police violated his Fourth Amendment right to be free from unreasonable searches and seizures when they inventoried and towed his car after learning that he did not have a valid driver's license during a routine traffic stop. Now, the only justification that the state offers for the warrantless seizure of Mr. Brooks's car is the community caretaker exception. But there was no reasonable or legitimate community caretaker need in this case for towing Mr. Brooks's car because it was lawfully parked on a public street.
Counsel?
Yes.
Is that an undisputed fact that it was lawfully parked on the street?
I believe it should be deemed an undisputed fact. And I'll jump in and I'll address the state's contention that it did not concede at the post-conviction stage that Mr. Brooks's car was lawfully parked. I don't think that's correct. The main argument that Mr. Brooks raised in support of his post-conviction motion was that his car was lawfully parked and not obstructing traffic. And the state never responded to that argument in any way. In fact, it specifically conceded that the squad cam video shows that Mr. Brooks's car appears to be lawfully parked. So I believe this court should find that the state has conceded that Mr. Brooks's car was lawfully parked. And it should further find that by adopting the arguments contained in the state's post-conviction response, the circuit court implicitly found that Mr. Brooks's car was lawfully parked. But I would add this, even if this court finds that the state has not conceded that Mr. Brooks's car was lawfully parked, that would not change the outcome of the case. And that's because the state had the burden of proof in this case at the suppression hearing. So it needed to affirmatively prove that there was a legitimate community caretaker need in this case. And the state presented no evidence that Mr. Brooks's car was illegally parked or obstructing traffic. So the state can't rely on either of those grounds to establish a community care justification in this case. And I would also note that the state doesn't do that either. The state isn't arguing that a parking violation or a traffic obstruction provides a community caretaker justification in this case. In the state's brief, it says, and I'm quoting, it does not matter if the car was lawfully parked. What matters is whether the police reasonably towed and searched the car, even if it was lawfully parked. So I believe the squad cam video does show that Mr. Brooks's car appears to be lawfully parked. Does that answer your question, Justice Kelly?
Justice Kelly, you're on mute, so when you speak, you have to take your mute off. It's up in the right-hand corner.
Yeah, sorry. Thank you. That does.
As I was saying, there was no community, reasonable or legitimate community care justification for towing Mr. Brooks' car in this case. His car wasn't violating any parking ordinances. It wasn't obstructing traffic. It wasn't inconveniencing a private property owner. And it wasn't jeopardizing public safety in any way. Also, Mr. Brooks was not arrested as a result of the traffic stop. So he retained control of the car, and he could have made arrangements to have another licensed driver or a private tow truck remove the car from the scene. This court therefore hold that the towing and associated inventory search of Mr. Brooks's car constituted an improper and unreasonable exercise of the deputy's community caretaker function.
Counsel, now, in this, counsel, yes. Is it your position that he retained control of the car up until the time of the arrest?
He retained control of the car up until the time that the deputies seized the car in order to tow it, and that's when they began the inventory search.
So it's the inventory search which is the determinative time regarding who's in control?
I think that's correct. The police had told him at that point that they were going to tow the car. The deputy begins the inventory search. And during the inventory search, of course, they discover the firearm in the trunk. Mr. Brooks is arrested. Certainly, at that, even if it doesn't begin at the moment of, I believe it does begin at the moment when they tell him they're going to tow the car and begin the inventory search.
Counsel, seems to put weight on the fact that he was not the registered owner of the car, and also the fact that a safety concern, which seems legitimate, of not having individuals come to the scene during the course of a stop. So how do you address both of those points in terms of the community caretaker function?
Sure. I don't believe the fact that he was not the registered owner is determinative in this case. I think so long as there is no indication that he was wrongfully in possession of the car, he should be deemed to be in control of the car, and he's allowed to make alternative arrangements to have the car removed from the scene, again, by calling the registered owner to come get the car, or calling another licensed driver, or calling a private tow truck. He doesn't need to leave the car unattended, and he does remain in control of the car. And I think the Minnesota Supreme Court in State versus Goodrich did hold that so long as there's no indication that the driver is wrongfully in possession of the car, he should be able to make alternative arrangements to have the car removed from the scene. Regarding your question regarding officer safety concerns, sorry, what was that?
No, it's just my staff talking to me. Justice Ann Walsh Bradley has had some difficulties with her internet connection, so if she doesn't appear on your screen, she will be on her phone, so she'll still be able to hear the argument.
Okay, very good. As I was saying, regarding the state's officer safety rationale, I would say this. Officer safety is a legitimate concern during a traffic stop, but it didn't require, in this case, it didn't require towing Mr. Brooks's car. As an initial matter, I would point out that the deputy's actions here are actually inconsistent with the asserted safety rationale. The safest thing to do for them, of course, would have been simply to issue Mr. Brooks his tickets and end the traffic stop and leave. And that's because there was no reason to tow the car because it was lawfully parked and not obstructing traffic. So the tow itself wasn't necessary. And they also could have let the registered owner, Miss Megan Hill come to the scene to retrieve the car. I think either one of those options would have been safer than extending the traffic stop by seizing the car. That resulted not only in a situation where the length of the stop is extended longer than necessary, it also required one of the deputies to go inside this other car, search around inside of it. This all occurs on the side of the road while there's traffic coming by. The deputy's back is to the oncoming traffic. At one point, his feet are dangling out of the car. So I think what the deputies did was actually more dangerous and less safe than the alternatives. And I would add that as a general matter, it does make sense for police officers to want to prevent an unknown third party from coming to the scene of an ongoing traffic stop. But I don't think that's the same as needing to prevent a specifically identified individual, in this case, who happens to be the registered owner, from coming to the scene to get the car. And that's also consistent with the deputy's actual actions in this case. Now, it's true that when Ms. Hill pulls up to the traffic stop, they initially tell her, you can't stop here. But once they realize that she is, in fact, the registered owner, they allow her to remain on the scene in order to speak with her about the situation. They allow her to take property that was inside of the car and take that, the keys and an iPhone that was in the car. And I think that reflects that allowing the registered owner of this vehicle to come to the scene of the traffic stop to retrieve the car or for any other purpose was not a genuine officer safety concern in this case. I'd also add that even if that was a legitimate safety concern during the ongoing traffic stop, I don't believe it was a legitimate concern after the traffic stop was over. So in this case, after the deputies issued Mr. Brooks the speeding ticket and the other ticket, the traffic stop should have been over. At that point, they had no authority under Rodriguez to detain him any longer. They weren't required to remain at the scene. Of course, they could have remained at the scene if they wanted to, but they couldn't remain there and indefinitely prevent a third party from coming to the scene to retrieve the car. That's just not reasonable. Circling back then, I would note this, that there's no dispute in this case that the police seized Mr. Brooks's car within the meaning of the Fourth Amendment. So the community caretaker analysis in this case turns on two questions. Number one, were the deputies exercising a bona fide community caretaker function when they inventoried and towed Mr. Brooks's car? And two, if so, did they reasonably exercise their community caretaking function? And as I mentioned before, the state had the burden of proof for both of these steps at the suppression hearing, and it failed to establish either one. Regarding whether the deputies in this case were exercising a bona fide community caretaker function, they were not. When a car is lawfully parked, or alternatively, when the state fails to prove that it is illegally parked or obstructing traffic, then there is no legitimate community caretaker need for towing the car just because the driver does not have a valid license. That conclusion is consistent with cases from the U.S. Supreme Court, this court, and the clear weight of authority of courts from other jurisdictions. Regarding U.S. Supreme Court case law, the seminal case on the community caretaker doctrine in traffic cases is South Dakota versus Opperman. Now, in Opperman, the U.S. Supreme Court identified two principal examples of when officers can tow vehicles under the community caretaker exception. Number one is vehicle accidents, after which officers take custody of a damaged or disabled vehicle to permit the uninterrupted flow of traffic. And second is vehicles that violate parking ordinances, which can also interfere with the movement of traffic and potentially create a public safety hazard. But none of the concerns that are discussed in or listed in Opperman existed in this case. Mr. Brooks's car was not involved in an accident. It wasn't damaged or disabled. It wasn't obstructing traffic. It wasn't violating any parking ordinances or jeopardizing public safety in any way. So we have a situation here where none of the usual community caretaker concerns that typically exist in traffic cases existed. So what then is the alternative bona fide community caretaker? Yes.
Counsel, the state has noted, and we've noted in prior case law, that the Opperman factors or concerns are non-exclusive. Could you address that, please?
That's correct. The Opperman examples are non-exclusive, but there still needs to be a community caretaker purpose or justification for towing the car. The police have to have a valid reason to do that. They can't just tow the car because they can. So the Court of Appeals in this case said that the officers were exercising a bona fide community caretaker function because there was no way for the police to anticipate when Mr. Brooks's driving privileges would be restored. He or someone else would be able to collect the car. But that's wrong for several reasons. You know, first, the deputies could have just asked Mr. Brooks if he was able to make arrangements for someone else to come to the scene and retrieve the car. Mr. Brooks did testify at the suppression hearing that his girlfriend, Megan Hill, who was the registered owner, was only a few minutes away. And that's reflected and confirmed by the squad cam video. And Ms. Hill lived less than a mile away from the scene of the stop. It was a 12-minute walk from her house to the scene. The second point I would note with respect to the Court of Appeals decision is that even if the deputies couldn't have known right away when Mr. Brooks might be able to have the car removed, that still would not have given them an actual community caretaker justification for towing the car. Community caretaker functions are actions that officers take to protect people or property. Here, there was no need to tow Mr. Brooks's car to protect people or property, even if Mr. Brooks wouldn't have been able to have the car removed in an immediate fashion or while the stop was still ongoing. There's no evidence, again, that his car was illegally parked or obstructing traffic, and no evidence that he was vulnerable to theft or vandalism. I think a good analogy for this would be a situation where, let's say a driver has a flat tire or has car trouble, and they have to pull over by the side of the road, and they pull over into a lawful parking spot. In that situation, there's no good reason just to tow the car because the person can't make immediate arrangements to change the tire or to have the car removed. The possibility that a person might abandon the car for an unlawful period of time is not a good reason for towing the vehicle immediately and not giving them an opportunity, a reasonable opportunity to remove the car.
Counsel, to what extent does your argument change, if at all, if Mr. Brooks had been arrested?
That's a good question. And obviously, Mr. Brooks wasn't arrested in this case. That's not what happened. But, you know, even if he was arrested, he would have been arrested for a minor traffic violation of a civil forfeiture of driving while suspended. His car is lawfully parked. There's no evidence that it's vulnerable to theft or vandalism, so I don't think there would be a community caretaker justification even if he was arrested. But again, he was not arrested, and that further supports my position that there was no community caretaker function because he is in a good position to make alternative arrangements to have the car removed, and he still retains control of the car, and the car is not abandoned. I want to switch gears and talk about some of the state's arguments as to why there's a bona fide community caretaker function. The state argues that this court's decision in State versus Asboth establishes a community caretaker need, but like
Can you just, I want to back up a little bit to your arrest answer. Just dot the I's and cross the T's for me. Why is it that he wasn't arrested? Was he free to go?
He was free to go, and the officer said he wasn't under arrest during the stop. The squad cam video reflects that, and the officer also testified at the suppression hearing that Mr. Brooks was not under arrest as a result of the traffic stop or for the violation of driving while suspended. He told Mr. Brooks he was not under arrest and was free to go while the inventory.
Was the officer telling him that he was free to go? Or, I just want to make sure that we know what it looked like on the scene for whether he was free to go.
Well, the officer asked him to get out of the car. He told him he was not under arrest. The officer testified at the suppression hearing that Mr. Brooks remained free to leave while the inventory search was being conducted, and he was not detained or placed under arrest until the firearm was found.
Okay, so he could have just walked away, is your position. He couldn't have gotten in his car, but he could have just walked away.
The officer said he wasn't under arrest, and at the hearing, the officer testified that he was free to leave. He was waiting for them to finish the inventory search, though, because I think he was going to take the remaining, like the house keys and some other items from the car before he left. But he was certainly not under arrest as a result of the traffic stop.
And you're sure that he certainly wasn't under arrest? I'm hearing your answer to be primarily because the officer told him he was free to go.
And the officer also told him he's not under arrest.
Okay, so because the officer told him he's not under arrest and because the officer told him he's free to go, that's what you're hanging your hat on?
And also, the officers gave no other indication that he was under arrest. They didn't put him in handcuffs or tell him, you know, you have to stay here. I wanted to briefly touch on State versus Asboth. None of the factors that created a bona fide community caretaker function in Asboth are present in this case. First, Mr. Brooks' car was not abandoned on private property. It was lawfully parked on a public street, so it wasn't an inconvenience to a private property owner. Second, Mr. Brooks wasn't arrested like the defendant in Asboth, so he retained control of the car, and he could have made arrangements to have it removed. Now, it's true that he couldn't have moved the car himself, but it wasn't necessary for him to do so. There was no need, the car didn't need to be moved right away because it was legally parked. And Mr. Brooks, therefore, could have and should have been given the opportunity to call a licensed family member or friend to retrieve the car. Also, because Mr. Brooks wasn't arrested, there was no risk of theft or vandalism to the car because of a lengthy abandonment like there was in Asboth. The car in Asboth likely would have been abandoned for a lengthy period of time since the defendant was arrested for armed robbery. But Mr. Brooks could have remained on the scene until another licensed driver or private tow truck arrived. He didn't need to abandon the car, and he didn't need to leave it unattended. And even if he did decide to temporarily leave the scene, he could have removed any valuables from the car and locked it himself, and he could have returned with a licensed driver within a reasonable period of time. It's also important to recognize that there's no evidence in this case that there was any risk of theft or vandalism beyond what exists for any car that's parked on a public street. The state presented no evidence that this was a high crime area, that car break-ins or vandalisms occurred frequently in the area, or that Mr. Brooks's car was somehow unusually susceptible or vulnerable to theft or vandalism. So there's no actual evidence that the car was vulnerable to theft or vandalism where it was parked in this case. There's only speculation. And finally, because Mr. Brooks wasn't arrested like the defendant in Asboth, there was no need for the deputies to make arrangements to reunite the car with the registered owner like there was in Asboth. Mr. Brooks was perfectly capable of reuniting the car with the registered owner, and she was, in fact, the registered owner was, in fact, on the scene shortly after he was pulled over before the tow truck arrived. And The reality is actually that by towing the car in this case, the state actually made it more difficult for the registered owner to be reunited with the car. Again, she lived less than a mile away from the scene. She could have easily walked the scene to get her car, but instead she would have had to find a ride to the impound lot and paid storage and towing fees in order to get her car back. I would also add that despite what the state says, the deputies in this case did not have a legal duty to the registered owner. In United States versus Duguay, the Seventh Circuit held that states owe no legal duty to protect things outside of its control from private injury. And the state hasn't cited any cases that hold otherwise. And so the reality is here that actually by impounding the car, the state or the deputies assumed a liability for the county that they wouldn't have otherwise had. By seizing and taking custody and control of the car, they create a potential liability should any damage to the car have occurred during transit or at the impound lot. So if the goal here was to avoid legal liability, the smart thing to do would have been the exact opposite of what the deputies did here. I would also add that the community caretaker function in this case, even if it does exist, it was not reasonably exercised. And there's a lot of reasons for that that are laid out in my brief. But I think one factor, the final factor, weighs particularly heavily in Mr. Brooks's favor, and that's that there are many reasonable alternatives to towing the car. Number one, the deputies could have instructed Mr. Brooks he could no longer drive the car and allowed him to have another person or a private tow truck remove the car from the scene. And I see my time is up.
Yes, thank you very much, counsel. Attorney Potts, are you ready to proceed?
I am.
Please do.
May it please the court, my name is Abigail Potts and I represent the state in this appeal. This is a Fourth Amendment seizure case. And the two points that I want to focus on here today are first, that the community caretaker function, the bona fide community caretaker function in this case, is quickly and easily established on this record, which leads me to my second point, which is going to be that the bulk of our focus here should be on whether or not that bona fide caretaker function was exercised reasonably under these facts. And it's the state's position that Brooks's privacy interest in the trunk of someone else's car after he was speeding without a license does not outweigh the caretaker goals in this case.
Counsel, the Fourth Amendment concern that occurred when they found the gun in the trunk was a search, not a seizure. And you started out by telling us this is the Fourth Amendment seizure case. So I think that's a little cross purposes. Do you know what I mean? There are different interests. The privacy interests go with the search. Possession interests go with the seizure. So you started out telling us this was a Fourth Amendment seizure case. And I was very interested in that because I think opposing counsel didn't really define which it was, just a Fourth Amendment concern.
You raise a good point. This is a seizure case. The issue here that we are dealing with is whether or not the officer's decision to tow the car was reasonable under the Fourth Amendment. So you're right. What we're focused on here is the community caretaker function behind the decision to tow the car. And we're not addressing the inventory search. That is not the challenge here. So the point I want to make, the first point, basically, is that I think in briefing, opposing counsel and Mr. Brooks have kind of confused the prongs that we're really addressing here and what facts go with these prongs. The community caretaker function analysis has three prongs. The first, no one's disputing this was a seizure. Second, we need to identify whether or not there was a bona fide community caretaker function going on here. And it's the state's position that on this record is very easily determined. And let me explain. The officers in this case decided to tow the car because their policy told them they had to. And that policy had absolutely nothing to do with investigating crime. So it's our position.
Counsel, is it possible for the department's policy to overcome a Fourth Amendment interest?
Are you asking that, are you asking whether or not the policy can be exercised or implemented constitutionally? Is that
what I'm interested in is whether the state's position is that the department's policy takes precedence over the Fourth Amendment guarantees.
I see. I would say that your question goes to whether or not that policy was reasonable, constitutionally reasonable, as applied in this situation. It is our position that the policy itself is constitutional. It's almost, I would equate it almost as to a facial challenge. The policy at issue here was divorced of criminal investigation, and it furthered community caretaker functions that this court in ASBOB recognized.
Okay, are you talking about the policy 501.31.19, which is called arrest tow? Because that requires an arrest.
No, we're not talking about that policy.
Okay, which one are you talking about?
We're talking about the policy that the officers testified to credibly at the hearing. So what we know from the record in this case is that the officers testified, and the court found that testimony credible, that they were following a policy. And that policy, as the hearing testimony shows, was that if they pull over a car and there is not a licensed driver on the scene to take possession of the vehicle, they tow it. So that's different than the policy you're referring to, somewhat. And that's the only policy that's actually in the record here.
Counsel, I'm wondering why that policy is at all relevant to this case. In Fourth Amendment cases, we look at the reasonableness of the circumstances in this particular case, correct?
Correct. So I think your point...
So why are we concerned about what the department's policy is? The question that we have to answer was the seizure of the automobile a reasonable exercise of state authority under the Fourth Amendment, isn't it?
That's true, but where the policy comes into play here, I would say it relates kind of to both the second and third prong in this analysis. It relates to the existence of a community caretaker function because in our case, the policy answers the question, why did they tow it?
No,
we want to know what the function is. We want to know why they decided to tow the car.
Counsel, you can't create a community caretaker function simply by adopting a policy.
I agree, and that's not what I'm trying to say. What I'm saying is that here, there was a department policy, at least we have from the record and the testimony at the hearing, that there was a department policy that you can't leave a car without a licensed driver to take possession of it, okay? So that is the reasoning that the officers in this case towed the car for.
Okay.
Then
let's stress test that a little bit. Let's say that... the car is parked in a mall shopping parking lot. And the police obtain information that the driver of the car has an expired license, can't drive it home. Would the department feel free to tow the car from the mall's parking lot?
I think the facts in your case go to this third prong, which as applied to the facts, is this reasonable under the Constitution?
No, that's not my question. The question is, would the department have the authority to tow the car from the mall parking lot simply because they learned that the driver had an expired license?
There may be a community caretaker function being exercised there if there is evidence that supports that.
What would the community caretaker function be in that circumstance?
Well, it would depend on I don't think the policy that we're talking about would apply in that situation. If there was a different policy, the policy might have more express community caretaker functions in it. But
can we discuss the question without reference to the department's policy? I don't see why the department's policy has any relevance to whether the Fourth Amendment was honored in these circumstances?
I think the department's policy really is only relevant to the degree that it gives us a motive here.
Why are we interested in motive?
Well, just as this court has said in Asvath as well, the community caretaker function has to be something, a function that doesn't have a criminal investigatory purpose behind it. And so with that comes into why did the officers do it? What hat are they wearing in this scenario? Are they wearing a criminal investigatory hat or are they wearing a community caretaking hat? This policy is relevant.
So what we're looking at is purpose, not motive.
I would agree with that. I think that motive might come in the third prong when we're talking about, okay, there was what I would kind of describe almost as a facially valid a bona fide community caretaker function going on here because they were not acting in a criminal investigative purpose. Now let's ask whether or not that was applied reasonably.
You're asking for an assumption to do an awful lot of work for you. The question before the court, I think, is whether there was a valid bona fide community caretaker function taking place. And if that's not what the other members of the court are interested in, it certainly is what I'm interested in. I'm trying to figure out what possible reason the department had for towing this car. Mr. Brooks says it was lawfully parked. I think it's probably your burden to show that it wasn't if the justification is that it was not lawfully parked and therefore needed to be removed. But if assume for a moment that it was lawfully parked, what possible interest does the department have within the meaning of the Fourth Amendment to remove the car?
Whether or not the car was lawfully parked is relevant to the overall reasonableness of this community caretaker functions being exercised in this situation.
Let's start with this. The car was lawfully parked. What legitimate community caretaker function would be served by towing the car?
A couple of them were identified by this court in Asvath. One thing is that, and I think it's a very relevant fact in this case and distinguishes this case from many of the others, is that the officers in this case caused the car to be located where it was located. This is not a case where the driver of the car had already parked the car or had chosen the location of the car to be parked and left. This is a situation where officers stopped a car pursuant to a valid stop on a place the car was not going to. And they did not have anyone to take possession of that car. So that car would have had been left.
Let's not go too fast. Why is it relevant that the car was there because the police had pulled him over? Why is that relevant?
I think that's relevant to the overall reasonableness of whether or not this was, whether or not this function was exercised reasonably in this case.
You keep saying it goes to the reasonableness, but what I'm trying to figure out is why? What is it about the car being parked somewhere other than where the driver would prefer to have it parked? Why does that give why does that factor at all into whether the police can tow it?
Well, it's our position that it increases the officer's obligation or duty to the registered owner of the car when they have caused the car to be put in a situation where it could get abandoned. And that's what this court did recognize in Asvath as well, that there is some, contrary to what Mr. Brooks says, there is some obligation in this analysis to the registered owner of this car. This was not Brooks's car. When the officers discovered this was not Brooks's car and that they had caused this car to be located in this location, their community caretaker hats are also on, and we have an obligation to protect this car from vandalism.
Counsel, what owner would prefer to have their car towed and have to pay the tow fees and be inconvenienced to go get the car when they could simply go to the location of the car with presumably the second key and drive the car away? I don't understand how you can argue that law enforcement was basically doing the owner of this car any favor at all.
Well, your question assumes that we want officers on the ground executing a policy that is considering all of these different things. In fact, I think this case involves...
When you answer that question, could you do it without respect to the policy? We're not interested in what the department's policy is. What we're interested in is whether the Fourth Amendment was honored in this case. So when Justice Brandley asked, what owner would reasonably prefer to incur tow charges and have to go to the impound lot to get her car back rather than simply driving to the location? Could you answer that question without reference to the department's policy? I don't care about the department's policy.
Sure. What the registered owner wants is not going to be determinative in whether or not this is constitutional.
Okay.
What we are looking so then
your answer is not responsive then. Because if that's not a factor, then this so-called duty to the owner can't justify the tow.
No, I didn't say that it wasn't relevant. What I'm saying is that the officers have community caretaker functions and goals that they need to further. And one of them is not to cause a car to be put in a situation where it could be harmed, especially if the owner of the car is not there and doesn't have knowledge of it.
Was there anything about where this car was parked that suggested that it was at risk of harm?
No, and I think part of that, again, we bring in, I know you don't want me to use the term policy, but the officers here had very limited discretion. And that's where this policy kind of comes into play. What we're going to see is that the officer...
I don't want to hear about policy. This is not about whether the policy gives the officers discretion. This is about whether the Fourth Amendment gives them the discretion to do this. The policy simply is not relevant. Can you answer the question with respect to the Fourth Amendment and not the policy?
Sure. Can you restate your question?
Sure. So if the car was not at danger where it was parked, what is the community caretaker function the officer was exercising? You said that they had a duty to the registered owner not to put the car in a place where it was in danger. But if there's no danger here, then what possible caretaker function could the officer be exercising apart from what the policy says? What was it that he was trying to protect against?
Well, in this case, we don't know for sure whether the car was legally parked, but let me say that this car was on public property, and there is a reasonable, and which has been identified by this court, Asboth, and in other courts, there is a recognized community caretaker function in convenience and safety. So not just safety. There's also, we don't know whether this was parked on, you know, how far away from the curb this was parked. We don't know.
Isn't that your burden to establish?
So I would say that it is not our burden to establish in order to find the bona fide community caretaker function. I would say that it is an element that goes to whether or not that function was exercised reasonably.
Okay.
And it is one of many factors.
If you don't know that, then perhaps you could concentrate on what the factors were in the case. It suggested that this car parked where this car was parked.
Sorry, you cut out a little at the end. Can you just finish the end of that question?
Sure. So let's not deal with questions that you don't know the answer to, right? About whether, how far away it was from the curb or anything like that. Let's just focus on what we do know about this case. What were the factors about this car where it was parked that suggested it needed to be towed to satisfy a community caretaker function?
The officers caused the car to be put in a situation where if they didn't tow it, they would have had to leave it without someone who could legally take possession of it. And that outweighs the very limited Fourth Amendment rights of Mr. Brooks in this case. And
aren't you potentially proving too much by this? Anytime an officer pulls someone over, that person putting the car somewhere where the driver would prefer it not to be. So if we credit your argument, aren't we suggesting that anyone pulled over for a traffic violation, if that person cannot drive the car away, is subject to the car being seized and put in an impound lot?
Well, again, I think we are kind of converging the second and third prongs of this analysis. I think that the policy in this case, and again, sorry to even mention the policy, but I'll rephrase it. The community caretaker function in this case would be unreasonably applied under different facts. However, in this case, it was very reasonably applied. Mr. Brooks had a license in someone else's car, and he didn't even own the car. So we have a situation where officers, I'm sorry, Justice Dallet, go ahead.
I was just going to say, you know, you say, when I listen to your argument, it seems to me that there isn't any room for an occasion where there is no community caretaker function the way you're defining it. And I want you to speak to that. The state seems to be saying they've got this interest anytime somebody gets pulled over because they're causing them to pull over into a place they don't want to be. Therefore, they have an interest and it could be, you know, the car could be abandoned. And I mean, you're listing all these things. When is a situation that it would never, you would not be able to apply the community caretaker?
Well, that's a good question. And I want to make clear that an exercise of the community caretaker function is not constitutional unless you show the second and the third prongs of that analysis. So what I am saying is I think that opposing counsel is putting too many of the facts in that second prong, that is there the existence of a bona fide community caretaker function? And I would argue that that is a simpler question than we're making it in this case. And that the facts, a lot of the facts that we're discussing here today, go to whether or not that function, which this court has already acknowledged in Asboth, and many of the same functions apply in this case, whether that function was exercised reasonably. And it is that third prong where a lot of applications are going to fall as unconstitutional. In our case, it is our position, I'm sorry, was that?
Yep, counsel, just to follow up on Justice Dallet's question, what I'm hearing you say is functionally, so long as the officers are not undergoing a criminal investigation, but they're actually trying to take care of something, that seems to set the bar for the prong two on whether there's a bona fide community caretaker function. And so that functionally, it is an awfully low standard that seems to be met so long as they think they're doing something to protect persons or property, in that you're setting that low. And if I'm understanding that correctly, I guess I'd like you to just maybe address that. And if so, how does that compare to the analysis that this court did in Asboth and others that did seem to put a little bit more of that analytical weight into whether you were actually caring for some person or property versus just you thought you were, as opposed to doing a criminal investigation?
Sure, and that's an important distinction. In Asboth, this court did show that they did put some weight into that analysis on whether or not the functions, the community caretaker functions that were being presented, were bona fide and legitimate. And they found three major functions there. And it's our position that at least two of those three apply in this situation. And so in our situation, the reason why I say it's easy, it's not that the bar is really all that low. It is that after Asboth, not only do we know that the officers in this case were acting in a non-criminal investigatory way, but the reason they were acting furthers recognized community caretaker functions, as recognized by this court in Asboth. The need to take care of a vehicle, ensure its safety, ensure the interests of the non-present registered owner are protected, to prevent a car being put in a situation that is inconvenient to others. There are functions here that have been recognized. I would say that in our case, because of Asboth, we can move more quickly to that third prong where a lot of the facts that we're discussing now relate, which is, okay, they were acting in a non-criminal investigatory way for reasons that we've recognized. However, is that constitutional here? And this kind of goes to Justice Kelly's point, which is really, is it reasonable under the Fourth Amendment? And it's our position that it is for several reasons. One is that we have to keep in mind that Mr. Brooks's Fourth Amendment interests here, his privacy interests here, are greatly diminished in A, that we're dealing with a vehicle. B,
you don't get to them, counsel. If you fail on the search, you do not get to the search. If you fail on the tow, you do not get to search the trunk. And I think that's why everyone is asking you about that, and that's why I asked you to distinguish between the interests of privacy, which come into play with the search, and the interests of possession, which are grounded in the seizure doctrine.
Good point again, yes. And I think a lot of the case law involves kind of a combination of both. Opperman and Bertin were both really primarily inventory search cases, but they reference the seizures and the community caretaker function. So I think it is important to delineate those. And here, did Mr. Brooks have a constitutional right to possession of that vehicle, someone else's vehicle, after he was speeding without a license in someone else's car? And I think that that all goes to the reasonableness of whether or not that outweighs that right he has at that point, after he made these decisions to be speeding in someone else's car without a license, diminishes his rights to a point where the officer's community caretaker duties to the registered owner of that car and to the community at large start to outweigh it. And that's what, in this situation, as you can see.
I'm a little concerned by the breadth of your suggestion. Let me put it to you this way. I have three daughters at home of driving age. They frequently drive my cars. They're registered to me, not to my daughters. Are you suggesting to me that if my daughters take one of my cars out, that the police have a greater interest in the possession of my car than my daughter does?
I am saying that your daughter arguably has less of a constitutional right to possession than you would.
Yes, but I'm asking, does she have less of an interest in possessing the car than the police do?
Well, that would depend on the other circumstances of the case. What was your daughter doing in the car? I mean, there's lots of other, again, I think this goes to the fact that this goes to this third prong, which is overall totality of the circumstances under the facts of this case, was this function exercised reasonably under the Constitution? And a lot of elements go into that. And that's why I said before that the things like whether or not this car was legally parked are not, they're relevant. They're not determinative. They don't by themselves determine whether or not this was constitutionally reasonable. They have to be weighed against the other considerations in this case. And so in your scenario, it would depend on what was the nature of how did the officers come in contact with that car. In this case, I think it's really interesting to note that, you know, in the dissent in Asbaugh, the dissent seemed very concerned with the case of U.S. v. Sanders. A lot of cases like Sanders and even Opperman in are cases where officers came upon a parked car. That's a different situation. Clark, which Brooks cites throughout his brief, from our perspective, is simply not a good analogy to this case. So our case is very different, partly because of how these officers came in contact with this vehicle. That matters.
Counsel, is it your position that if someone pulls over someone for speeding, finds out their registration has expired, their license is suspended or something along those lines, I guess license suspended here, that officers in that situation, assuming they have a policy that says this is what they should do, can impound that car?
Well, again, it would depend on the circumstances of the case, but what I think would be relevant in your scenario is, why did they tow the car? Okay, did they tow up the car pursuant to some policy that gave them discretion to make that decision all sorts of ways? That might not be a bona fide community caretaker function, or it might not be reasonable under the Fourth Amendment. In the case that we have, the policy said, if this and this and this happen, you got to tow the car. So no discretion. And in many ways, that's how want these policies to function. That's, in many ways, that's how we want the community caretaker function to work. We want officers in the field to be able to efficiently and consistently apply policies that are non-criminal investigation policies. Is someone asking a question? I'm sorry.
I was about to ask a question. So what I hear you saying is that as long as there's policy, that's enough. That's going to be a factor that's enough, because that the fact of a policy is going to tell us that they couldn't have wanted to search it for any other way. And it sounds like you're discounting any other factor besides that.
No, I think you're, part of my point is coming through, but obviously not all of it. It is not constitutional if there is a policy. If there is a policy, in the policy in this case, as I said to Justice Kelly, really just tells us why they towed the car. What function were they exercising? And they were exercising non-criminal investigatory function, okay? But that doesn't make it constitutional. You still have to see whether or not that function was exercised reasonably under the Constitution.
I'm just not hearing what are the factors where you would ever say it's not reasonable. I'm not hearing it. I mean, let's talk about a stop. Let's not talk about a parked car. So is there, I mean, what is a scenario that you would say under the state's view of this that it's not reasonable? Because it seems to encompass all. That's what I'm hearing.
Let me give you an example. If Brooks had been speeding down his road and he pulled into his driveway really quickly, or pulled into the registered owner's driveway really quickly, and the officer stopped him there for speeding, and he didn't have a driver's license, he obviously couldn't move the car, but the car was parked in his driveway. That might be a situation where, even though the policy would require them to tow the car, possibly, it wouldn't be reasonable under the circumstances, because the car was on private property and it was his private property, or it was the owner's private property. So I'm not saying that this policy in this case will always be applied in a way that is consistent with the Fourth Amendment. What I'm saying is that the nature of the policy in this case gives us an idea of why they decided to tow it. And that, to me, goes to that second prong. And then we go and we look at whether or not that function, they were, I don't think it is disputed that they towed the car because their policy said so, and that policy doesn't have anything to do with fighting crime. Then we move on and we ask whether it's reasonable. I see my time is up, so I don't want to take more, but if you have any other questions, I'd be happy to ask them.
No, I think that's fine, and thank you much for a fine argument. I know it's not always easy to participate in this way, so thank you.
Thank you.
Are you ready for rebuttal, Attorney Todd?
Yes, Chief.
Please do.
For the reasons I stated in my primary argument, I don't believe there is any legitimate or bona fide community caretaker function in this case. Again, the car is legally parked. It's not obstructing traffic. It's not vulnerable to theft or vandalism. So the police don't have any legitimate purpose to protect people or property. There's no need to tow the car. But even assuming that there is some community caretaker function in this case, it was not reasonably exercised. This court looks at four factors in determining whether or not a community caretaker function is reasonably exercised. And those factors in this case strongly weigh in favor of Mr. Brooks. The first factor is the degree of the public interest and the exigencies of the situation. Here, the public interest did not require towing Mr. Brooks's car because it's lawfully parked and not creating a roadside hazard. In State versus Clark, the Court of Appeals held that when a vehicle is lawfully parked and undamaged, quote, it poses no apparent public safety concern, end quote. And that, I think, weighs against finding a reasonable community caretaker justification for towing the car. The second factor is the attendant circumstances. Again, the car is lawfully parked on a public street. It's less than 2 miles from Mr. Brooks's house, less than a mile away from Miss Hill's house. And the third factor is whether or not an automobile is involved. And generally, people do have a lesser expectation of privacy in a car than in a home. But Mr. Brooks still had a reasonable expectation of privacy in the car that he was driving. In Clark, the Court of Appeals said that this expectation includes the expectation that a vehicle can be left parked legally on the street without being towed, even if it's unattended. And you know, I would also like to point out that contrary to what the state says, the expectation of privacy in a car is not insignificant and it's not minimal. And that's especially true when a car is impounded and seized and rather than merely searched on the side of the road. Now an inventory or an impoundment is necessarily going to include an inventory search as well. But I think the seizure and the impoundment of a car represents a more significant Fourth Amendment intrusion. For many people, other than their house, their car is the most significant piece of property they have.
And Counsel? It's
driving is a privilege. Yes.
Counsel, I want to return for the brief time we have to the issue of policy. Is it your position that a officer or deputy's policy is not relevant to the reasonableness inquiry?
I think it is a factor that this that the court can consider in determining whether or not the community caretaker function is reasonably exercised. It's not determinative, and
indeed,
policy by itself.
Indeed, that's what the majority in Ashworth said, as I recall. Is that your understanding in part of the majority opinion?
That's correct.
I want to move then. The policy that was discussed at the suppression hearing on page 131, and you don't need to refer to that, really was talking about this unwritten policy of we don't allow anybody else to show up because we don't know what they're going to bring to the scene. Their written policy that was attached to the post-conviction motion says something to the contrary. Now, it's regarding arrest tow, and it indicates that it's okay if a person shows up at the scene as long as that happens prior to the towing. What relevance is this written policy in our analysis of this case?
That's a good question. And I think it's not just that this arrest tow policy exists in writing that's significant. It's the fact that the written arrest tow policy is the only written policy that the Sheriff's Department has for towing vehicles in any context. And I think that policy and also the lack of any written policy for towing vehicles when a driver is unlicensed seriously draws into question the veracity of the deputy's assertion that his department really has an unwritten policy that required him to tow Mr. Brooks's car under the facts of this case. And that goes into my ineffective assistance of counsel claim. Unfortunately, I see my time is up.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you both very, very much for participating in oral argument in this new format. You both did a really good job, and your briefs were very helpful to the court. We're going to take a 10-minute break now so that other counsel can be let into our discussion, and we will be back in 10 minutes. We are adjourned.
Thank you, Chief.